All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true. All the flowers of spring could never make them sing like the way that our love grows, the colors it will bring. No one could take our blue skies away.
Hello and welcome to February of 2022. And everywhere we go, we see pink hearts and red hearts and big boxes of chocolates and just about any imaginable creation for sale to make money off love. That's how important love is.
Yeah.
People make a lot of money off love, don't they? Songs about love, rings, jewelry, diamonds. What else do people make money off of love with? Poetry,
music,
flowers.
Yeah.
So it's good. I think it's fun that
God
made a world that and made us with emotions, not robotic, because He could have easily made us so that we just automatically are programmed. You know, AI people, computer programmers can do all kinds of things. I mean, they're doing some kind of scary things these days with reading your mind, even controlling your mind. It's kind of wild. But love itself is a beautiful thing and something we all like. And today we're going to, because Valentine's Day is coming up, and we are the Music of Marriage with
Bob and
Evie, which I forgot to say, but we have a website called themusicofmarriage.com, and we wrote a book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing, Five Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. So we have songs that we've written and on there as well that you can download, but the book How to Make Your Marriage Sing
is on Amazon.
Yeah, which, of course, you can
get access from our site.
The Music of Marriage. And so it's only natural to kind of focus a little bit on the topic of love and what it is and what's God got to do with it. You know, what has God got to do with love? Not what's love got to do with it.
Yeah, right.
Is a famous song, but love is a very difficult thing to understand what it really is sometimes. You know, is it more than words, a song that we're going to play later? Is it more than feelings? Is love driven by feelings? So when the feelings are gone, you know, you say, oh, there's just nothing there, quote unquote. Or is love something different than that and something more that's more reliable and firm of a foundation that we can build a marriage on?
Yeah.
So that when all of our tries kind of fail, or our, you know, habits or whatever, our methods, and just our natural inclination to not do the right thing can really, you know, wear down that love foundation. Because what we're going to talk about today is, you know, what's God got to do with love, which is an awful lot. And that's an understanding of that is how we're going to have a foundation that, like the Bible says, when the storms come and the rain beat on it, and a lot of those are self-imposed storms on the love in our life, we can know very specifically how to act in a way that will produce a completely different result, a completely healing and happy result.
Yeah, and the way you define love does depend on the definition you seek, where you find the definition. Just out of curiosity, I looked up love in the dictionary, the online dictionary, And I was really amazed that 18 of the 20 definitions had a lot of definitions, but 18 of those only had to do with feelings, emotions, affection, needs, affinities, and sexual aspects of love. And while these attributes certainly play a part in romantic love, but there are no distinctions made in the dictionary by defining love as either moral or immoral, or and no mention of its origin, which is God. And also, there was really no mention of love as an action, as a verb. You know, an action verb. It was more like a passive thing, something we receive as opposed to give. And that can lead a lot of people astray. And you know,
in fact, I was, if you don't mind me jumping in here, but in our society, love is usually spoken of in passive terms. And I'm reading from R.C. Sproul note here. And that is, in our society, that we often think that love is something that happens to us over which we have little or no control. We quote-unquote fall into love, like you're walking along and, oh, whoops, I just fell into a, you know, a hole in the ground. I didn't see something. But that isn't accurate, but that's how our society often speaks about love. We fall into it, and of course, you know, we can know what love is and still talk about falling in love, but it's good to know that you don't fall into love. And we speak this way chiefly because we associate love with a particular feeling or emotion, but such emotion cannot be produced by pushing a button or by a conscious act of the will. We do not decide to fall in love with someone. But the Bible speaks of love in far more active terms. The concept of love functions, like Bob said, more as a verb. You know, a verb is an action word like run, hit, give, pull, push, you know, stop. Those are verbs. And in God's original love definition, that is what love is. It's functioning more as things that we do. It's actually a duty, an action that we're obliged to perform. God commands us to love our neighbor, to love our spouse, and even to love, our enemies.
Boy, that's a big one.
And sometimes your spouse feels like your number one enemy in life, depending on the situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can't love your spouse, how can you love your enemies?
And if you can't love your enemies, how can you love your spouse?
Well, it does work both ways, because it comes from what? The heart, whatever's in
right.
your heart.
So he's saying it is one thing to conjure up feelings of love and affection for one's enemies. It is another thing to act in a loving manner toward them. And that's kind of the way we want to encourage ourselves and anybody here listening to think about love, so that you don't feel helpless, because there are actually things you can do. In fact, the last song we're going to play today, Love's the Little Things, talks about that there's always something you can do. And
that's a song Evie wrote.
The minutest action of kindness just can turn everything around 180 degrees.
Of definitions, love, as it's found in the Bible, in the New Testament, it's the Greek language is the original language of the New Testament. And the Greek word for love in the New Testament is agape, which means actions versus feelings. It means Christian love, especially as distinct from erotic or emotional affection. And the origin of the Greek word agape means selfless love. So that's all it is. That's when we look at the word love anywhere in the Bible, and we're going to be looking at 1 Corinthians 13, because that's the famous love passage that's often quoted at weddings. you know, for good reason, because love is certainly the duty of marriage. And but we have to be careful where we get our definitions of love, because if we don't understand what love is, it's pretty hard to practice it from a biblical perspective. And as Christians, and maybe we're not all Christians who are listening out there, you know, especially need to practice it in a biblical way, not in the way that the world views love, which really robs it of its meaning and beauty and relegates it to the area of feelings and sex. So it's kind of a self-serving thing as opposed to a serving thing.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, we know that Jesus came as a servant, you know, and so it's very hard thing to learn how to become a more loving person, how to incorporate just in your everyday life in your marriage. How do we just naturally, what tendencies do we just naturally fall into? We kind of often get used to a level of, you know, behavior, the way we respond, talk to each other, our tone of voice, our own personal tendency to want to protect and defend ourselves and our own self-interest. So since next week is actually Valentine's week, I think today we're just going to embark on this whole concept of, you know, what is love and what's God got to do with it, and see if we can, when we do the study on this at home, I literally said to Bob, I don't think I really am qualified to, this is way above my pay grade. This is not something I come anywhere near doing as I should.
Ditto.
It's like when you go to a museum and you stare at an incredible work of art, and maybe you're an artist and you wish you could only do it that well. Or you're listening to the Beatles, their new movie, Get Back. We've been watching them. Oh, it's a really cool movie. And then you're thinking, how do they do it? They just come out with this amazing stuff. And when you read God's definition of love, or when you even meditate, which, because we're made in God's image, we all naturally understand what love feels like. And I think we feel loved when people are kind to us and thoughtful of us. And if they're not, then they're at least apologetic for it and say, and indicate that they'll try to do better, that's they're not okay with just treating you that way, you know, infringing on your on who you are, or putting you down, or anything else. So it's a topic that's almost untouchable in a way, and yet the beauty is that God himself, who is love, I know there's a verse that says that we love because he first loved us.
1 John 4:19.
Yeah. The character of love is measured by God's character. So how could we possibly ever measure up? But the beauty, that's where the substitutionary, that's where God fills in the blanks for us. And I think that's one thing in our marriage. People say, how have you been married so long? God fills in a lot of the blanks. He doesn't sit up there and say, okay, you've got to be, here's the perfect whatever. He does say to be like me, but he knows that we will fall short. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know what? You know, I give you a pass, because I know you can't. You can't be perfect. But so that gives us hope, you know, that we have God's help in filling in the blanks. And there's times when Bob and I, you know, we're like, wow, we really blew it with how we treated each other. And it's like as if you just have to fall back again on the power, the presence, and the performance of God and his love, his presence is what we gather around. It's like he's the warming fireplace in our marriage and in our home. And when things get cold in your heart between you, that fireplace is burning. That's God's love. And
got to get near that fireplace.
And you gather around and start over, which is cool.
Because God is love, which is even more germane than God's characteristics are depicted as being loving. And his characteristics are certainly that, and his attributes, because he is the very definition of love, which is hard to comprehend. But, of course, everything God does really shows that, displays that truth. Like Psalm 86:5 says, "For you, O Lord, are good and forgiving, abounding in steadfast love to all who call upon you." So that's how God is, you know, good, forgiving. He abounds in steadfast love, which means love that doesn't wane, wax and wane according to moods or according to whether the person that he loves is being loving back. So that means God is loving no matter what. And it's certainly because his love is unconditional.
And it says, to all who call upon him. So that's what we do. When we fall apart in our ability to love in the way we've behaved toward one another, and it's like time for reckoning, you know, like, what is this love we have? This, you know, this wasn't it.
Yeah.
So how can we gather around that warmth of God's love, that fire, that eternal flame of God's love that never, like you say, it never is not there for us. And it's there when we call upon him. Mm-hmm. So that's the cool thing. It's like we have this third party we can bring in and know that we can, you know, start over.
Yes. And, maybe we should play that Bee Gees song to kick things off. The song is called Too Much Heaven.
Can't get too much heaven, right? I think they're talking about love a lot. It's a beautiful description, actually, in their lyrics. And so hopefully this will inspire you, too.
I'm waiting in line. Love my
We're back with the music of marriage, and we're talking about the grand and immense subject of love. And we had spoken about the definitions of love from the dictionary to the Bible, and they're two different, completely different perspectives on love. But ultimately, all of us have to be accountable to God, right? So the Bible's definition of love is certainly the one that we need to pay attention to, and because we're not going to be held accountable by Webster and his dictionary. But so anyway, let's just get right into that. And 1 Corinthians 13 is verses 1 through 8 is a passage that is the Bible's definition of love. And the Bible talks about love in other places as well. But this is kind of a summary of it. And so I'll go right into it. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. That's quite a litany of...
I don't think there's any more...
defining terms.
That kind of shuts my mouth. Like, how do you ever measure up to that kind of love? And yet, the beauty is that it's there for us to behold, kind of like I said, a great work of art, you know, great music. You just stand there in awe of it. You can never achieve it yourself, it seems, but you should. Yeah. But you should try to, and it inspires you because it is actually achievable enough to have us have success in our marriages.
Yes, and it wouldn't be unachievable if God wrote it in the Bible. Everything He writes in there is certainly achievable, and not necessarily in our own strength, though. Here's where God comes into the picture. So this passage, while it seems too high for us to really measure up to, albeit it does inspire us for sure, it's very reasonable from God's perspective. And so the passage, if I speak in the tongue of men and angels, begins kind of poetically there, and it decries every exalted human trait as being nothing without love. It's quite amazing. And it places biblical love on a higher plane than even faith, prophecy, and giving, philanthropy or benevolence. And then the passage progresses with a practical focus on selfless love and presses on with the certainty of love's unfailing nature, because that is the nature of love. It endures. It doesn't fail.
That's why
it perseveres.
It's important to know that love isn't feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
Because feelings do come and go. I mean, you can be extremely upset and have a big blow up in your marriage, and then the next thing you know, you're all like, you know, we see that when we watch the Andy Griffith Show and Barney, you know, he's from one end of the spectrum to the other. You know, one minute, oh, I'll never have anything done. I wasted 5 years of my life with Thelma Lou. Yeah. The next split second, he's on the porch. Oh, Thelma Lou, you know, trying to cozy up to her again. That's how fickle, we really are fickle people. And That's why it's so important to know what love is, that it is based on something beside our feelings, that we can actually take an action. We can mm-hmm. back up and, you know, turn the car around and take a different road. And it just changes everything. It changes your emotions. When Jay Adams hit one of his big things, he's a well-known Christian, kind of started the whole Christian counseling movement. But he would say, you know, love isn't based on feelings.
Feelings, right.
Because obviously they're very unreliable. And what marriage would last past a few days or a week if it was based totally on feelings, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So,
yeah. In fact, the connection or the shift we have to make is, since love does have a romantic side, although 1 Corinthians 13 doesn't speak of that side of love, there are other passages in the Bible that does, like the Song of Solomon. And marriage always starts out, or dating starts out, when you love another person romantically. You have, and a lot of it is feeling based. But that, at that point, if you're considering getting married to someone, if their love doesn't transcend feelings, in other words, isn't shown by action, by self-giving type of action toward you, then you need to be concerned about whether this is the right person or not. But oft, I think all of us start out our relationship largely with romantic feelings, and that's
we're all very kind to each other at the beginning.
Yeah, but that's the way God made us, and that's great.
Then you snagged the person.
Yeah. Once you snag them,
now you start saying, "Yeah,
you can relax, right?"
I got her. Hey, where's my dinner? Why didn't you do this? What are you doing? You know, we get just our natural, lovely selves come out, and that's when we have to. It's really helpful then to know. But before you are married, or when you are first married, you have a vision of what love is going to be or what marriage is going to be. And I don't think a lot of people realize the hard work of it. It's not a walk in the park. It's not a bed of roses. I mean, it is. It's work. It's a functional societal unit. It's the first institution God created to give order to society, to give a place that we can feel loved and welcomed, even when we fail, which reflects how God is to us. We can feel welcome always, even if we failed, no matter how much we failed, because that's the nature of love. That's God's way with us. So mm-hmm. in our homes, the first established societal unit, it's very important that we strengthen our idea and be more accurate in our idea of what home life should be, what marriage should be, so that we can raise children up to replicate that. And
and how we should practically love one another.
And give society it brings peace. It brings peace. There's a lot of quote-unquote mental illness. That's another thing that society has gotten wrong a lot, where they call just plain wrong behavior, quote-unquote, like mental illnesses, if you can't control it.
Like addictions and things like that, yeah.
But there's a lot of that that comes from a bad dynamic in a marriage that might be in a home, right, that a child grows up seeing and observing. Now, that mm-hmm. child has been marinating, so to speak, in that in the atmosphere of what is created by our marriages. What kind of atmosphere is there in the home? Is mm-hmm. there backbiting? Is there open put-downs of your spouse in front of the kids and other people? That sort of thing. Or is there a protecting of each other and a handling of our disappointments or failings
mm-hmm.
with this kind of, you know, godlike patience and forgiveness, et cetera.
Yeah, and it is interesting that the first two characteristics of love, in fact, the very first characteristic is patience. Love is patient. Love is kind. So they're the first two. And I always thought it was interesting that patience is the first characteristic of love. And I think there's a good reason, and that's because it's so easy to become impatient with one another, whether it's in your marriage or in friendships or any relationships. And but love establishes that from the very beginning, that this is what I need, this is how I need to act towards others. I need to act in a patient way, and I need to be kind no matter what's going on.
And you could just take that one word, love is patient, and you could probably spend your whole life, but you could spend a lot of time just thinking, what are the ramifications? If I was to decide that it's important, if I'm going to preserve love in my home, or if I'm going to inspire love in my home or toward others, patience.
Mm-hmm.
So how many ways does impatience display itself, or how many ways does patience, to look at it positively, display itself?
If I
drop my wife drops the casserole, or she drops my plate of food, or my husband's late, what are the habits that we've developed? Because they are, we can learn.
What are the responses that we have?
Yeah.
In those situations.
And why is it that it seems like, I know for me, it just can be so hard. I think, how can I ever really overcome myself? Because the self-centered nature that we have since the fall, is so dominant. It's so natural that it's really challenging just to think about just that one part of this verse, that love is patient. But it has many... I mean, any of us, I think, can appreciate when someone has not responded. Like, how different would your home life be? How different would your marriage be if you didn't let things irritate you? Well, it says later, it's not easily irritated.
Yeah.
That's part of the patience thing, I guess.
So. Yeah, and it perseveres, which means you have to have patience all the time. Forever. you can't, and that's the other thing about this definition of love. There's two aspects of it, and one is what love is, and the other is what love isn't. And I did notice in the dictionary that not only were there definitions, all kind of, maybe more self-centered related in some ways, but there was never any definition of what love is not. And so in this passage, we have what love is. It's patient. It's patient. It's kind. It's protecting. It's trusting, hoping, persevering. But it's also depicted in non-actions. What isn't it? It's not. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. And that's a big one, too, for marriage, keeping no record of wrongs. And it does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. So people who do not focus their attention on the wrongs that others do to them, with this kind of love.
It's really overwhelming. I mean, it sounds like something that would only be achieved in heaven. But the thing is, it without this, without these guidelines and this definition of love provided by the essence of love, God, who can't be anything other than this. He gives us this definition so that we don't lose hope, but like you say, persevere. And that's one thing, for example, in our marriage of, 46 years? We were married young, but we have
Is that another way of saying we're not old?
Yep. We're not old at heart. But perseveres. Love perseveres, which means it doesn't mean you don't have love if you're not always doing the right thing. It means that love is its own thing, even outside of us, mm-hmm. because love is God. So love, mm-hmm. God perseveres. He perseveres with us. He perseveres in our marriage. And he says, yeah, you blew it there, but that doesn't mm-hmm. matter. Let's get up and get going again. And then when you are feeling better and things are in alignment and there's peace and contentment in your hearts with each other, and you sit down and watch that movie after having a big blowout argument, but now you're all lovey-dovey, you're so thankful that God does, that love does persevere.
I love you. La-di-da, la-di-da.
Hi, welcome back to The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie. And again, our book is How to Make Your Marriage Sing on our website, The Music of Marriage, or on Amazon, you can get that. And some of the songs that we've written that are, you know, based out of a Christian worldview, but they're kind of stories or whatever, you know, and they hopefully, you know, help to bring focus and inspiration in the area of love, which is, of course, what we all like to have. We all love love. So we need to love to learn about love more. And, you know, when we focus ourselves on saying, you know, I'd really like to learn more about what love is, then I think we realize it requires personal change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
absolutely.
That's where I know I kind of resist. Like, well, I'm kind of comfortable the way I am. And I'm a pretty good person. I'm a pretty good wife. I do a lot of good things. I do this, I do that. I go to the church, and I'm a pretty good person in general. And my husband or wife is pretty happy with me. But there are always things we can challenge ourselves on. I think we each know where we have a tendency to maybe repeatedly fall into trouble in our marriage. And it comes out of habits that we have and maybe a lack of willingness to practice like we have to in our music. You know, when I was learning piano growing up, I took lessons from a Juilliard graduate for a while once. But even my dad, when he taught me, they helped me very much by saying, you keep stumbling over this section of this piece. So this week, I only want you to practice those four measures of that song. And that's what I want you to focus on. I think that's not fun. I just want to play the whole song through and over, and I want to just glide past where I'm stumbling. You know, you hear your kid practicing piano or trumpet or whatever, and they're like, oh, man, he hit that hard part again, and he messes it up every time. So I was trained that you focus on that part where you're stumbling a lot. And how helpful that would be in our marriages, too, or, you know, relationships in general, where we stumble, we get into trouble, we get tied up in knots. Maybe we don't even love ourselves when it comes, maybe you're not married even, but, you know, we need to love ourselves not in a wrong way, but in a way of understanding that, you know, maybe you were told you wouldn't amount to much growing up. Maybe you were married to somebody, or you grew up in a home where you were told or made to feel like you weren't worth much. Or something was said to you that just sticks with you and you feel like a loser. You feel like you'll never overcome or be able to get better at anything. Yeah. And the neat thing about with God is we're not measured. He already filled all of our failings. He's covered all of them. So we don't have to feel like, wow, I won't get into heaven, or I'll never have a good marriage if I don't overcome this. And there's a lot of bloggers, there's a lot of, you know, smiley-faced podcasters out there sitting in front of waterfalls in Hawaii where life is perfect and marriage is perfect or whatever it is, rattling off all of these high-minded, you know, goals that if only, oh, if I listen to him on my way to work, I'll listen to him on the way home, I'll listen to Bob and Evie, and then I'll know what to do. No, because we're all just human with our habits. And none of us will ever measure up to this passage of what love is supposed to be, for example.
Yeah, we're all complex. There's many areas in our lives where we are blind to our problems. And that's one of the benefits of being married, is that our spouse is pretty good at pointing them out. and that's why husbands have wives, because, you know,
because they're good at
they're
pointing
experts
out
at
the
it.
Mistakes,
but
right?
She's got a front row seat.
She's got a front row seat. That's right.
You know how much money he would pay for the advice I give him if he had to go anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
He's so thankful it's free.
And so, you know, I've heard a few wise men say, after they've been married 50 years, you know, the one thing that I've learned is to always say yes to my wife. And, you know, that might seem extreme, but that's darn good advice because, you know.
Do you have this on tape, Daryl?
Well, women are kind of on the inside of things, you know, and they work from the inside out. Men are often on the outside trying to figure out what's in, how to get back in. And, you know, we're all the philosophers, and the women, you know, are the nurturers. So,
but we need each other, and the way God created us and love is complex. It keeps us busy, that's for sure. But we should have hope. We should really have hope and not look at this and say, oh, I'll never, yeah. You know, I've failed too many times, or I struggle too much because all my life I da-da-da-da. And, you know, also that Paul talks about running the race that's set before you to reach the prize. So, you know, we all have the help and the hope that we need. That no matter where we're at, no matter how hopeless it may seem or loveless it may seem, remember how feelings can change when you just start doing kind things. I think there was a movie about 12 years ago that some Christian, it was about this marriage that was really hopeless, but each day, the husband, who was now separated from his wife, was guided by a wise person to do these actions. Okay, now take this action. Take the trash can in. Just very simple little things. And by the end of the month, their marriage was all great because they just backed up and learned how to focus. Just like I was saying in the music, you know, when you... Even the Beatles did that. When you see this movie, Get Back, we keep talking about the Beatles, maybe because they're so, they're really up there on a high plane, but artistically. But when you see them, you know, they work, and you work over the difficult parts, and you just have to keep practicing till you get it right.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that. And like what did we say in our book, you don't have to be perfect to have a perfect marriage, right?
Right. And what did John Lennon say about a Band-Aid when they were having a dispute with George, and George left the group, and they were trying to win him back, and Paul didn't do a very good job at winning him back? And
They snuck a microphone in the flower pot or something, and they heard George and, I mean, Paul and John Lennon. But I thought it was kind-hearted that John Lennon said, but George was very wounded in his British accent, which I can't imitate, and we didn't give him any bandages. And yeah. I thought that was a very kind way for him to look at how, you know, and they ended up reconciling and restoring the group, the Beatles, and that entire relationship. They had three get-togethers with George there, and I thought it was a beautiful example where... You know, and that sometimes we just don't stop to think because it's hard. It's a little bit hard work, or we're so defensive and wanting to be right that we just block, you know, the flow of love. And we need to give each other, recognize when we've wounded someone and give them the bandages.
And reconciliation is an act of love. And so that's another biblical concept that
it requires
is
humility.
Good in marriage.
It was humble of John Lennon to say that, not just to say, well, why on earth did he leave? We're the Beatles, you know? What's wrong with him? And instead he was very sensitive about what was going on there, as we all would love to be, as we all love love. We love to be loved, and hopefully we'll learn more about love as we go along here.
So this week, there's a little exercise that we should think about, and that is, first of all, meditate on 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 8, and get it into your psyche, into your spirit, into your heart, and then listen to how you come across to your husband or wife. Is there patience and kindness in your tone of voice? Is there gentleness? in the sound of your voice or your demeanor, because words are very powerful. And just take that one aspect of love and listen to the tone of your voice and ask, are these characteristics in my spirit? Is that what is coming across to my husband or my wife?
And I had written a song called that we're going to play in a second here. I don't know how many seconds we have to talk yet before we play the song, but it's called Love's the Little Things. And I was just reflecting on how, you know, and it's not the diamond rings. It's not just for kings and queens, you know. So I hope that inspires you. And have a loving rest of the day. And we'll see you next week.
Okay.
Love's the little things. It's not the diamond rings. Sometimes it's the hidden things that you do. Love's the little things. Not just for kings and queens. No matter who you are, there's something you can do. If it takes dying to myself, if it takes losing all my wealth, if it takes moving all that's keeping me from you, I'll gladly go the extra mile just to see your sweet face smile. I love the little things, love that big can do. Love's the little things, the spring a deep well brings. Sometimes it's a song you sing that makes it new. Love's the little things, the wind beneath the wings. No matter who you are, there's something you can do. If it takes dying to myself, if it takes losing all my wealth, if it takes moving all that's keeping me from you, I'll gladly go the extra mile just to see your sweet face smile. I love the little things, love that big. Stops believing, it keeps pushing through. Loves the little things, in spite of what it seems. No matter who you are, there's something you can do. If it takes dying to myself, if it takes losing all my wealth, if it takes moving all that's keeping me from you, I'll gladly go the extra mile just to see your sweet face smile. I love the little things, the love that big can do. I love the little things, the love that big can do. Yeah, I've seen just what a love that big.